And welcome to Chat About. We have Dr. Colleen Swank joining us once again, a pediatrician at Sanford Health of Northern Minnesota and the vice president of clinic there as well. And today we are going to be talking about COVID-19 vaccines that are now being released. And first of all, before we go any further, Dr. Swank, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to talk about vaccines.
Well, let's start with a really loaded question right off the bat, since this is going to be political like everything about it is. Should the vaccines be mandated?
So, I am a pediatrician, so it will not surprise you at all that I am pro-vaccine. I think that vaccines are, if not the best medical invention, then one of the best medical inventions in the last 500 years. So, just to give you some background, you know, we vaccinate about 16, we give 16 vaccines in the U.S. routinely. And of those 16 vaccine preventable diseases, I have seen people die from 9 of those diseases in my lifetime. And once the COVID vaccine is approved, then it will be 10. So I absolutely think that vaccines help save lives, absolutely. But I don't believe that they should be mandated for every person in the United States. However, I do think that everyone should be informed about the vaccine, and I'm hoping that once they're informed about the vaccine, they will choose to become vaccinated, because I think that the vaccine is the easiest, fastest, and safest way for us to develop antibodies against COVID-19 so that we can go back to socializing and traveling and going to sporting events and seeing our loved ones in the nursing homes.
Speaking of making informed choices and being educated, I think that, you know, you're speaking vaccine singular, but we've heard about several. So what is actually happening in the U.S. right now?
So right now there are, I believe, 10 vaccines against COVID-19 in play, and 2 of them are close to getting FDA approval for emergency use. And so those 2 vaccines are one by Pfizer and one by Moderna. We're expecting that the one by Pfizer will be approved today or tomorrow.
Okay. How do you go about getting the right information? Where can we find that?
That's a great question. So I think that the best source of reliable information is the CDC, or the World Health Organization, WHO. Now, your listeners might say, well, those are government agencies, and so I don't know if I want to get my information from them, and that's fine, but then you could go to sanfordhealth.org. But then you may say, hey, I don't know you, Dr. Swank. I don't know if I should listen to you or the place that you work at. Again, that's fine. Look at the other reputable organizations across the country, Johns Hopkins, Stanford, Harvard Medical, Cleveland Clinic, Mayo. All of their websites will have excellent information both on COVID and on the vaccine. And again, you might say, well, those are health organizations, and you know they're giving the vaccine. I don't know if I want to get my information from them. Well, then go to reputable peer-reviewed journals, such as the Journal of American Medical Association, Lancet, New England Journal of Medicine, or sciencemag.com would be another great place to get that information. But my biggest fear is really the misinformation and disinformation and outright lies that people will be seeing over the next days, weeks, and months on their social media accounts and on the internet. And a lot of that information is really packaged very slickly. It looks good. It looks like it could be reputable. And so that's my biggest fear is that a lot of that information will be false.
Well, there's certainly a lot of it floating out there. Let's start with, you know, the one we probably heard since they first started talking about vaccines back in March, the paranoia that there will be a chip in the vaccine that will be able to trace us wherever we go in the world. What is the truth of that?
Yeah, that one's interesting to me. I think that this one is categorically false. I don't believe that we have the technology to do this, or the desire really to do it. And when you think of how many people are involved in vaccine production, especially, you know, within the government and outside of the government, when you think of how polarized a mask mandate is and that we can't get everyone to agree with that, I certainly don't believe that we could get people to agree to vaccinate every person in the world with a chip. And I think you will also see a lot of people from every walks of life getting the vaccine, and they would not agree to that if there was a chip inside of it. So that one is false. And you can read online where that misinformation sort of started, but it has been proven to be false.
Okay. One of the things that you mentioned, and I hadn't heard this one yet, but is that there's some information out there that it changes your DNA, and I know that it's a new technology, this vaccine is, but what's the reality of that?
Okay, yeah, and to explain that one, let me first explain how the traditional vaccines work. So traditional vaccines work by injecting either a killed virus or bacteria into your body to mount an immune response, or an attenuated attenuated bacteria or virus, so part of it that causes you to get sick has been removed, but it still causes the immune response, or a piece of the protein on a virus or bacteria that would be injected to mount an immune response. And so that's the typical traditional vaccines. The COVID vaccine that is being introduced by Pfizer and also by Moderna uses something called mRNA technology, or messenger RNA technology. And so what they've done is they've coded the part of the virus. So you remember what the virus looks like? It's got those spiky parts on it.
Mm-hmm.
So they've coded the protein, the spiky part, which is made of a protein, and messenger RNA, when it's injected into our bodies, goes into the cell and causes our cells to utilize the machinery in the cells to actually make the spiky parts of the protein of the virus, the actual spiky protein. It doesn't make the whole virus, because if it made the whole virus, then we would be sick, but it just makes that protein part, that spiky protein part, and then our bodies mount an immune response to it. And so then when we're exposed to the real virus, our bodies say, oh, we've seen that, that's foreign, and attacks it and neutralizes it before we get sick. And so if you remember back to your science class,
that's a tall order, by the way.
Yeah, I know, you gotta stretch your mind. So the cell is made up of a membrane, and then there's cytoplasm, kind of that jelly stuff, and then there's a nucleus that floats in the middle. And the nucleus is where the DNA is, so all your DNA is in the nucleus. When the messenger RNA is taken up by the cell, it goes through the membrane and goes to the cytoplasm, but it doesn't do anything with the nucleus or the DNA. And so I think that that has just come from people trying to fearmonger, or just not really understanding the science.
Okay. So I'm still going to have all my same old DNA.
Same old DNA. We're not going to be able to mold you into a superpower or give you any special powers.
Because, see, I was kind of hoping for that, to be honest with you. The other thing I've heard a lot of, and I would not say this is a conspiracy theory. I think this is probably just, you know, people basing life on common sense, with it being produced so quickly, when we've heard that, you know, in years past, and it's taken, you know, several years to get a good vaccine. When this thing gets through as quick as it is, people are concerned that maybe the corners were cut, mistakes were made, and we're going to find out the hard way.
Yeah, and I think that that's an understandable fear. And again, some of the reason that this has happened quickly. I mean, there's a couple. I mean, there's many different reasons. Some of it is that there's been a lot of time, energy, and money focused on this, where in the past there probably hasn't been a vaccine that we have wanted to be able to get to everybody as quickly. And so that certainly is part of it. But the other part is just the technology of the vaccine and kind of what I just explained. So if I think of like a regular influenza vaccine, for example, that's a killed virus vaccine. And so you, once you discover which proteins that you need to be in this vaccine, you have to grow the virus, the killed virus, and that can take really a long time when you think of how many doses are needed to inoculate everyone. And so that just takes a really, really long time to do. Where for this, the technology was there because people have been working on these mRNA vaccines for a while before COVID even came into existence. So the part that they had to do was sequence the protein that they decided to use. And so, like I said, Pfizer and Moderna sequenced the spiky protein of the COVID virus. That part's quick. So the developing of the vaccine is quick. Then they started the trials. And I think a lot of virus or vaccines can go through kind of some hit and miss phases. And for this vaccine, the nice thing is that it looks to be 94 to 95% effective, where in the past other vaccines might not have been so effective, and so they kind of have to go back to the drawing board. And so some of the quickness is just that they made some really good educated guesses on what was going to work. But there's been tens of thousands of people who have received the vaccine so far, and they split them into placebo group. The placebo group got injected with basically some water with some electrolytes in it, and then the group that actually got the vaccine, and they looked at who got infected with COVID afterwards, and they looked at any side effects that the two groups developed. And ironically, the side effect group actually was the placebo group. So the ones that reported the most side effects were the placebo group. So presumably those side effects didn't have anything to do with the injection at all.
Well, with the vaccines soon to be here, we see the light at the end of the tunnel. We still don't know exactly how long the tunnel is. So what's next steps? I mean, obviously, it's going to start getting distributed. How do you get it? When do you get it? I can't just run down to the clinic and say, I'll get my vaccine, please.
Yeah, so we are expecting, again, that today or tomorrow that the FDA will approve the vaccine. And then the thing to remember that's different from other vaccines is that the federal government, working with the CDC and ACIP and some other organizations, are the ones that are deciding how much vaccine goes to each state as it's being manufactured. And then they're also deciding which groups of people are allowed to get the vaccine and in what order. So I think that's something that I really want you to know, is that it's not Sanford Health deciding you get it and you don't. It's really going to be fairly regimented and equal, so each state is going to have basically the same rules to live by. One thing that's a little bit different with our state is that we believe that the vaccine will be ready on the 15th of December, but our state is requiring a pause before any of it is given to anyone to make sure that we all understand and have a plan for how it's going to be distributed. And we have been thinking about this the whole time. So as far as here at Sanford, if we had the vaccine and were allowed to give it today, we would be able to do that. We feel comfortable that we've taught our staff how to do it, and that and that we're ready to go once we're given the go-ahead.
Are you hearing any sort of a timeline at all?
So the timeline, I do believe, and again, we'll know more in the next week, but I do believe that we'll be ready to vaccinate on the 21st of December. And I believe that it will be frontline healthcare workers who will get the first allotment of dosages. And then it will also be long-term care residents will be in the first groups to get it. And then there is lists, and I imagine that they will be published. So all of the resources that I gave you at the earlier, they will tell people what group they're in. So I think that's like 1A, 1B, 2, 3, you know. So you'll be able to look yourself and see what category or group you'll be in. As far as when do I think that everybody will, that wants one, will be able to get a vaccine, you know, it's just totally going to depend on production. But I think it'll be closer to summertime for someone who's, you know, 30, not an essential worker who's otherwise healthy. I think it'll, in my opinion, this is my opinion only, I think it'll be closer to summertime before there's enough manufactured doses to start giving the lowest risk people the vaccine.
So again, we're talking about some people a lot, you know, a number of people saying, I don't really think I want to take it. How many people need to take a vaccine for it to be effective to the greater population?
Yeah, and that's an interesting question, because it's you think it would be just one answer, but it's really variable. And so it depends on how easily the disease is to transmit, and then also how well the vaccine or natural immunity works. So for example, measles vaccine is one of the best vaccines out there. It is probably in the 95% efficacy rate if you get your two doses, but is extremely contagious. Contagious to the point where if you have measles and you're in a room and you walk out and somebody who hasn't been vaccinated or had the measles walks in, they can actually get measles with a pretty high likelihood. And so that you need to have herd immunity of like 95% to have acceptable herd immunity. Okay. But then when you think of something like polio, you need about 80% to have of the people to be vaccinated or to have had the disease, actually had the disease in a community to afford herd immunity to the people that haven't had the disease or can't get the vaccine for medical reasons or whatever. And I'm not exactly sure where COVID will be, but the higher the efficacy of the vaccine. And so, like I said, the early studies show that the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccine are 94-95% effective after the two doses. I would think that it will be kind of between polio and measles. That's just me talking. I haven't read that, but that logically makes sense to me with how well the vaccine appears to be working.
Okay.
So still a lot. Still a lot of people, you know, 80% or more.
In the meantime, we've got a surge going through our nation. Certainly, it's as bad as it's been, maybe worse than it's been in some places. And certainly, the numbers here have been much higher than it had been through much of the pandemic. Where are we at right now in northern Minnesota and Beltrami County?
So, as of yesterday. Here at Sanford, we have had a total of 3,099 positive, COVID positive people, for those people that have elected to get a test. In the last 2 weeks, we've had about 94 people be positive. It looked like last week we had a little bit of a dip in the number of our hospitalized people, and I don't know if that had to do with closing down bars or what that had to do with, but now I think we're starting to see the uptick in hospitalizations from maybe some gathering over the Thanksgiving holiday. And yesterday we had 31 people hospitalized. So far, our high, if you remember the last time we talked, was in November, and we had 35 people in the hospital at one time. So we're close to that number.
What does that number mean for what Sanford can handle and how it's affecting other health issues in the hospital as far as doctors and nurses availability and bed availability?
Yeah, so we, as far as the number of beds that we have that can handle a COVID positive person, we're at around 48. And like I said, our high has been at 35, so we've got lots of capacity there. Our staff has been amazing as far as picking up shifts and making sure that we're able to care for patients the best way possible. With COVID being in the community, they're at risk for getting COVID when they're out and about, and so they're doing a wonderful job of you know, socially or physically distancing from people and from taking all the protections that they can to avoid getting COVID, so that they don't have to miss work because they know how needed they are. And I guess that's one thing that I would say to the people listening is, you know, there definitely is a light at the end of the tunnel with the vaccine, but we really can't afford to let our guard down and say, well, there's a vaccine coming, we don't have to worry about it anymore. I still really, really implore people to continue to mask and physically distance and to strongly consider limiting their holiday gatherings to just the people that they're living with.
Yeah, I mean, we saw a lot of travel for Thanksgiving, and like you say, I think we're starting to see some of that translate here. Christmas is even a bigger deal when it comes to that. So, you know, and there's, I know there's, you know, church services. It's a huge tradition, certainly in my tradition, to go to the Christmas Eve service, and it's usually the most packed. Everybody's tight, and I know they'll try to accommodate that, but boy, it's just a lot of things to think about and be aware of as you get ready for Christmas.
It is. It's so hard because, you know, Christmas is the season of hope. And it's really, if we need anything right now, we need hope after the last 9 months that we've had. But also, and I don't know about your church service, but mine have a lot of people that I would say are in high risk groups because of their age there. And I just would implore people to be careful because I want those people to be able to be there for next Christmas. I certainly wouldn't tell people not to go to church, but I think that you really need to take care that you're masking. The singing makes me a little nervous because whether you know it or not, you're spending a lot of spit and germs as you sing. So keeping the mask on for that, and just if you're having any symptoms of anything, don't go. Just don't go. The life you may save is somebody that you care about.
And it is not the same, but I think most, certainly our churches, and I think most churches are providing, you know, a multimedia event so you can take part of it at your home. And like I say, I understand that it's not the same, but it's still community, and it's still a bit of that tradition to be safe, particularly if you're a high-risk group.
Yes, and I think some churches are, you know, if they normally have two services, they're doing four and five services over the course of the day or spreading it out that way, and that's great. And I agree. I'm sick of Skype meetings and WebEx meetings just as much as the next person, and I would like to, say peace be with you and shake somebody's hand again. And I think if we do everything really well, we will be able to do that next year.
Yeah. I know what I hear. The most commonly used phrase in office meetings this year is, "You're on mute." anything else before we wrap it up today?
I think one thing that I would like your listeners to know about is that we are changing our visitor guidelines starting on Monday. And so these are a little bit different. And so you can have one visitor per patient for the patient's entire hospital stay. I know in the past we've maybe had one visitor per day, or they can switch out. And so really that person must choose the person who will be allowed to visit the patient, and that patient can visit as often as needed during the hospital stay. Another thing is we'll continue to require visitors to wear a surgical mask at all times. And we do provide the surgical mask. So if you have a cloth mask, we're going to switch them over to a surgical mask. Just because we've been seeing a lot of cloth masks, and I don't know if when you're out and about, you see some of those cloth masks and slowly they're slipping down below the nose, and the next thing you know, they're riding on the chin. And our surgical masks with the wire tend to stay on the face a little bit better. And then visitors, we're asking them that they only use the public restrooms and not use the restrooms within the patient's room. Certainly there will be exceptions to this, and we always have exceptions for the pediatric patients. We have exceptions for people that are at end of life. But overall, those are going to be our new rules, and it's just to try to limit the number of now that we have so much in our COVID positivity in the community, trying to limit what's coming into the hospital.
Okay. Again, before we wrap it up, one more thing. Give us does Sanford on their website have a spot we can go to with all the virus and all the vaccine information and links to some of the key places we'd want to go if we wanted to learn more?
Yes. If you just start with sanfordhealth.org, and then you will see links based on what you're interested in finding out.
Perfect. Dr. Colleen Swank is a pediatrician and the vice president of clinic at Sanford Health of Northern Minnesota, talking about vaccines and everything else COVID. Dr. Swank, thanks again for taking time to be with us today, and have yourself a very Merry Christmas.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And it was great to be on and talking about vaccines, which I know it makes me kind of a geek, but it is one of my favorite subjects. So.